All right, and we are back with Janie Jameson. She's a spokesperson for the Six Nations, and she's in the middle of the blockade right now, as I understand it. Hello, Janie.
Good afternoon.
Thank you so much for being with us in this busy time.
Well, thanks for giving us the time.
Awesome. We had a caller who just called in before we got you on the line, and he was basically asking, he said that he's been following the story in the mainstream news, and he can't seem to get a handle on what exactly is going on. He said, I've heard that this land was owned by the federal government, and it was sold to this company called Henco, and he said, what was it before? Was it a reserve? Was it forest? He said, I just can't figure out what the basic story is going on here, and what the history of it is. So maybe you could fill us in on what that is exactly.
Okay, well, in 1784, there was a tract of land given to the Mohawk Nation and all such others of the Six Nations that wished to follow. And the other part of that was it was for theirs and their posterity to enjoy forever. And the expanse of that territory is 6 miles on each side of the Grand River from start to finish. Total acreage is upwards of around, somewhere around 900,000 acres of land. Mm-hmm. And currently, we sit on less than 5% of that original tract. And that that land was granted as a thank you to the Mohawk Nation for their part in the American Revolution.
And so it was given by the federal government?
No. It was granted by King George. It was a proclamation is what it was. And it was ratified by Governor Frederick Haldeman.
Okay. And so currently you say you're sitting on less than 5%, so the rest of it has been sort of chipped away at and sold off. And
the proper terminology is stolen.
Okay. Yeah. So then how did Henco, this company, maybe explain their involvement? What happened then?
Well, so, throughout, in 1835, it was resolved, like this road that's in front of us, the original, the historical name for it is Plank Road. And it sits within that original Haldeman track. And specific to this, Plank Road is what's now known as Highway 6, and it runs from Hamilton, Ontario, to Port Dover, Ontario, one street road. And that road, to protect the interests of Six Nations people, everything south of that, and it's documented in the government archives, everything south of the Caledonia Bridge to Walpole Town Line North, or Walpole Town Line, all of that, which is, I'm guessing, somewhere around 20 miles of highway, everything west of that was only to be leased, never to be sold. And that was the Indian agent at the time was in agreement upon that, as well as the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, which is our traditional government. That's the agreement that was made. And so a few years later, that land, which is what we're on now, a small portion of it, ended up with a crown patent. And our question is, the Canadian government saying it was a surrender, we're just saying, well, show us where we surrendered it then. You know, you claim it's a surrender, then prove it. You know, we don't have anything to prove because the federal government now are the ones making that claim that it was a surrender by us. But in fact, what happened?
Oh, the phone just cut out there for a sec.
What's that?
Oh, sorry, the phone cut out there for just a sec.
Oh, and when what happened at the time was our lands within that Haldeman was tract were being squatted upon consistently and at a rapid rate, and our people went to the Indian agent and said, listen, you know, this land is being taken from us slowly and surely. What kind of protection can you offer to stop your people from doing this? And what they said was, we are going to put you all in one place, which is currently today Six Nations Reserve 40 and 40B, and you sell us all the rest of that land around you. There's never, ever been... the big issue here, too, is a trust fund. You know, any of that the money that was supposed to be derived from the leases, it was never, ever filtered back to us. There's no accounting of it. It's called the Samuel Jarvis Fund, or Samuel Jarvis dealings, because he was the Indian agent at the time, and he ended up having to resign because of the shady land dealings he was getting into. And so as far as the government saying that they bought it, they have never paid for it. That money, that money has never, ever filtered back to our community.
And so the specific land that is under dispute, is it the 5% that you're talking of, that sort of the 5% that's left?
No, that's it borders the reserve that the government so kindly kept us on. It's right on the fringe of that.
Okay.
It's a part of the other 95% that was squatted upon.
Of the original 900,000 acres.
Yeah.
That wasn't granted. That was sort of land that was already First Nations land that basically...
Oh, yeah, there's been artifacts found on the site that have dated back to somewhere around 7,000 BC.
And
those are specific to the Iroquoian culture.
And so was it King George, did you say? So he basically said, we'll leave this land alone. He wasn't granting it. But and then this is
to,
like
you
an official.
You have to understand too, like that. It was a proclamation.
Right.
It come from Great Britain. It come from Her Majesty, basically. Mm-hmm. So what gives Canada the right to supersede that? Mm-hmm. And that's another. There's a lot of issues that are involved here.
And so this proclamation is on record and
yep.
available
mm-hmm.
for anyone to see.
Okay.
And so how did Henko get involved then?
Like after 1841, when that so-called surrender happened, there was so much of our land that was sold under a crown patent. And in regards to Henko, this is like hundred and some odd years later, this land has passed through many, many hands. And the Hennings have been buying up the majority of around Caledonia and developing it for... And
Sorry, for what?
They've been buying up a lot of the land in Caledonia, and
okay.
they've been developing it for residential.
And so Henko is a development company?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. But they claim they bought it off of other townspeople from Caledonia, and that very well may be true, but it still doesn't change the fact, how did that land ever get out of our possession?
Mm-hmm.
You know, where is it? Because we've never ever sold it. You
right,
know?
And it was sold under a crown patent, but the Six Nations were never paid for it?
Yeah, and even that surrender itself, that was contested.
So there's no documents that back up the surrender? Like, there's nothing that can prove it?
There is one, mm-hmm. but there is a document out there. But after it was written out, our people protested it, or mm-hmm. Because the people weren't involved. There's five certain things that have to happen in order for us to sell our land. And so we're saying, okay, we know what those five things are. They were outlined all those years ago, and they were in effect then. But has Canada, abided by those? And we know darn well they haven't. That's why we say, well, prove us. You know, prove it to us then. Show us your documentation. Because in 1924, our traditional form of governance, the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, which is governed under the what's called the Guyana Lagoa, or the Great Law, and that itself is the oldest form of democracy based on peace in the world. That's what mm-hmm. the U.S. based their government on. That's what Canada based their government on, was ours. And in mm-hmm. regards to that, that governing body has always been there and existed for us, but in 1924, the RCMP come in and at gunpoint removed them and said, from here on in, here's this new elected system. You'll be voting for your leaders. You people no longer exist. And from here on in, you no longer follow that great law. You follow the Indian Act. There was never an option there. And so when that happened, every single record that our traditional government had was seized
right.
by the Canadian government. So as far as any documentation, we've had to scrape and search to find any of that because the government is withholding that, and we're not privy to that. They have not ever forwarded any of those documents back or any of the wampums back that they stole that day. So there's a big chunks of our history just sitting there, archived somewhere.
And I imagine it's somewhat difficult because unless you have your own documents to rely on, you have to rely on what the federal government has, and that could, of course, because of the historic and present systemic racism that existed, I imagine the federal government could do anything with their own documents,
or the
documents in the past could have been totally mm-hmm. skewed or totally biased because
yep.
the government was openly racist back then.
Yeah. Oh, and they're not now?
No, I don't know whether it's so openly, but maybe it is. Okay, so then what was it that sort of spurred on what is currently happening, like the current blockade?
On October 25th, 1784, that's when that original Haldimand Proclamation was signed and agreed upon.
That granted the land.
Pardon me?
That granted the land?
Yeah.
Okay.
And last year, well, there was this clan mother from here, and every year she would hold something to commemorate that, even if it was just tea in her living room. You know, she would never let that day go by unnoticed. So what I did was, like after her passing, I waited to see if anybody would continue honoring that. And nobody did. And so in October of last year, I held a lot of community meetings to plan it out. And what we did was decided to come here at this site we're on today to stop construction, just for the day. And some of the elderly wanted to take part, but we wanted to make sure they were safe. And so what we did was we had a... we stopped the construction here for the day, and in the evening we had a catered supper and a social so everybody could attend. Hmm. And that night it was decided upon, you know, we have to do it one more day.
Hmm.
We did. And after that, we decided we wanted to do more. So in November, just up the road from here on Plank Road, we stopped traffic and we handed out brochures. Well, we slowed it down. And we handed out brochures and pamphlets in regards to the history of this area, in regards to the history of Six Nations. And that was a great success. Like, we handed out somewhere around 4,000 pamphlets and got really positive feedback. And then after that, there was a small handful of us that decided, you know, like, we have to keep going with this, because at that point, they were going full tilt here. And they were already notified, you know, that this territory, what they were building on, was under claim. They had found, I forget what the actual measurements were, but in one really small confined area when the archaeological dig was done, they found over 300 artifacts just in one area alone.
Wow.
And overall, it's safe to say they found somewhere around 7,000 just on this property that we're on. All of those have been sent to, I think it's called Mayor something in London, Ontario, and that's where all of the artifacts are being held. There's never been that offer to give those back to Six Nations, and it's my understanding that it's up to the Hennings to decide, like Henco Industries, to decide what is going to be done with those, like whether they hand them over to us or whether they sell them or give them to a museum, whatever, but ultimately that decision is theirs. But if they don't make it within a certain amount of time, the archaeological, whoever did the dig, you know, they get to do whatever they want with them. And so that's where stands now, like there is strong presence of historical presence of our people that surpasses a 221-year-old Haldimand Proclamation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have artifacts found that are 7,000 years old, 500 years old, and they all stem from the Iroquois Confederacy, like one of the nations from within there.
Are there hi, Janie. I'm Julie's co-host, James.
Hi.
Are there no laws whatsoever, you know, explaining what to do or governing what to do when artifacts are found?
There is a process that they're supposed to abide by, and after seeing the archaeological reports, like, I find it really amazing. There's a rumored to be a burial site in the middle of this clear open field where a tree is. He had the excavation done in a circle all around that area, so everything had been excavated but where that burial was supposed to be. And it's common knowledge even amongst the non-natives here in Caledonia, like with a few of them, that is a burial site. But you know, it's never been verified. And from our teachings, we don't go and dig up graves. You know, we don't keep searching until we find skulls or bones or anything like that.
Europeans don't either. It's very strange. I mean, I find it very disturbing, the way that indigenous artifacts are regarded in Canada. And Julie was speaking with a local archaeologist yesterday.
Yeah, she's from the local archaeological society here in Nanaimo.
And she said that, yeah, it's disturbing to her as well that there's, you know, if you were to be digging anywhere else in the world and find 7,000-year-old artifacts, like, that would be big news.
European artifacts.
Yeah, European artifacts. Everything would stop and there would be, like, a dig and, you know, it would be... they wouldn't start building condominiums on top of it, that's for sure. And she said it's, you know, in her opinion, and I agree, it's part of the continuation of the cultural genocide that's happening still in Canada.
Well, that's it exactly. You know, like I was telling you about what happened in 1924. You know, we were basically told we no longer exist as a nation. And by them blatantly disrespecting our connection to this land in regards to our artifacts. That's another way of saying, you know, we don't care. Mm. We do not care if you know, if your existence has been proven. It doesn't matter. You still exist. When,
your phone's cutting out a little bit.
Okay, yeah, it does that.
Okay,
that's okay. We got you again.
Yeah.
Okay, but, like, my response to that is, it goes to show how far Canada is willing to go, to continue to prosper from lands that do not belong to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'll break every law they can. They're violating international law simply by what they did in 1924. But who's going to hold them accountable? Mm-hmm. Nobody. Mm-hmm. You know, like, they are able to do that, and we're at the point now where enough is enough. You know, we're no longer going to stand by and be ignored as a nation. You know, they themselves refer to us as the Six Nations. They don't say the six municipalities. They don't say the six provinces. They identified us as Six Nations. So they're well aware of who we are and what our international status is.
Also, for people that are listening that are want, like, sort of further input into this, I want to mention that Stephen Harper, his top advisor, his name I believe is Tom Flanagan, wrote a book actually that was entitled First Nations, like, ? Taking a Second Look. And he argues for, in that book, for full assimilation and no recognizing whatsoever any kind of separation between natives and non-natives, and that native people should just be totally assimilated. So for people that find that hard to believe, that is
okay,
the policy.
I'll tell you something, and I know a lot of people are going to have a hard time accepting this, but when you look at, like, there's certain parameters set by the United Nations as far as defining nationhood. You need your traditional land base. You need your traditional language. You need your shared or common culture. How many of those does Canada have? You know, how many people do you know that can stand up and speak Canadian? That language comes from across the waters. Their culture, they claim to be multicultural. So how is that shared or common? The land base, that's what they're fighting tooth and nail to maintain, or to obtain, I should say. And that's what it's all about. And people do not realize that. And it's so simple. But unless you go out on your own to learn these things, you'll never learn that in any school. Why? Because who controls the education?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's all propaganda. And these are the types of things that we teach. My children are 6 and 8, and they know all about these things already. And that's the scary part, you know, like they know who they are, they know their history, and there's going to come a point when they need to go to school off of our territory. And it frightens me to think that they know who they are, they know our history, but all these other people have gone through this education system without receiving an accurate history lesson. And they are the ones that are put in these governmental positions. They are the ones that work for the OPP, thoroughly believing that, yes, Canada is a nation. It isn't. You need those parameters to have your own constitution. Canada does not. Their constitution isn't valid.
That's a really interesting point.
Yeah, it's a very interesting point for sure.
I always found it interesting as well. Like, for example, here in Nanaimo, if you try and look up the history of Nanaimo, it always starts with white Europeans. And there's never barely a mention of anything being here before that. And that's also what this archaeologist was saying when I talked to her. She said, you know, there's absolutely no knowledge whatsoever as to the history, you know, a couple of thousand years ago. And that's why she was saying archaeology is so important, because, like, if you look at the landscape now, it's completely different from what it used to be. It's unrecognizable.
Yeah, yeah.
And when things are found, she said, you know, it's like pages of history that are just being burned by development, just being covered over. And
oh, yeah. Like, even this original road, like that agreement I was referring to, is a Plank Road Agreement. That's what it's called, Hamilton-Port Dover Plank Road Agreement. They changed this name to Highway 6. They've now rerouted a major highway going around the town of Caledonia, and they've named this part here we're on now Argyle Street South. So if you don't know your history, you will you will believe everything they tell you, and you will not understand you know, like, why we're doing what we're doing today. And like I said, my kids know that. They know this is Plank Road. They don't know it as Argyle Street or Highway 6. But it's not just the developers. You know, it's the government that's doing it. They're changing road names. They're changing town names. They're moving boundaries and all of this stuff consistently. Mm-hmm. And unless you know your history, you'll just take it at face value and never question, you know, is this really it? Or, you know, like when issues such as this come up, you've only been taught so much. But it's it takes a lot, you know, a lot of understanding and to be able to comprehend everything that's going on in a specific situation. Like the dynamics are, they're really overwhelming, and that's in regards like to the Samuel Jarvis misdealings in regards to the trust fund. That's in regards to the crown patents that were placed upon these territories. Everything like this right here, what we're sitting on, it's a can of worms. And can Canada see? Here's a big issue now. The elected system, that system that was imposed by the federal government, Canada since 1924 has said we will only deal with you, and that's how it's been. And in order to diminish our nationhood, to diminish that sovereignty that we have as an independent nation, they've been using that elected system to deal with the municipalities, to deal with province, in order to diminish our nationhood. But we know what's going on, you know, and that's why I said earlier, we're not a municipality. We don't deal with a province. Mm-hmm. You don't see Switzerland coming in to talk to the mayor of Haldimand, Marie Traynor. You know, that's absurd.
Mm.
But they're trying to put us on that same level. And now what's happened is the elected system has stepped back and said, we're handing all land, like this land issue, we're handing it over to the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, the traditional governing body. Now Canada is fighting tooth and nail to come to any agreements with them, to recognize them once again. Why? They cannot afford to deal with us on a nation-to-nation basis again, because they know our sovereignty comes with that, and they have a lot to lose.
So they basically can't deal with you on a level playing field because nothing would stand up to that, basically?
Our laws, because our laws don't apply nation-to-nation. You know, can you go over to the States and exert your Canadian law over there?
See, what you're saying is it's basically fundamentally different forms of governing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And I think what you've touched on here is really, really important to understanding current issues, the history, because I think that's the problem with current media, current analysis by the media, is that people are trying to understand this issue with no context whatsoever as to the history. And so people are making all kinds of assumptions without actually even knowing the long, long history of First Nations and Canadian government.
Well, that's the thing, too. First Nations, we are not a First Nation. A lot of them have treaties as subjects. When we were granted this land in that Haldimand Proclamation of 1784, it states right in there, as allies to the Crown. Allies, nation to nation. Canada knows that. Knowing that, we are not subject to their laws. You know, and no, we haven't exerted our authority as a nation, but that's what we're doing right here today. And that's why Canada has the RCMP surrounding us right now. They have the army 20 minutes away in Hamilton at a Hamilton, Ontario, at a hangar. They're trying to get we have the train tracks blocked off. They're trying to get that open. You know, they need to get in here and surround us and stop it, because as a nation, we could cripple them financially, you know, and they can't afford to have us exerting our own sovereignty once again, because then we wouldn't be under their thumb. You know, we'd have access to our lands and resources again, and they would have to be held accountable for all of these illegal certificates of possession that they've been handing out. They will have to be held accountable for all these taxes they're collecting off of land that has never been surrendered, land that isn't even theirs.
Wow.
So they have this is the biggest, In my eyes, my opinion, this is the biggest white-collar crime that's ever been committed.
Mm.
And who's holding them accountable? What's their response? We're going to bring those guns in. You know, they talk about peaceful negotiations. It isn't peaceful. It wasn't peaceful what they did yesterday. We are here unarmed, and under our constitution, the Guyana Lagoa, it states in there, our weapons were buried all that long time ago, and we will not bring those weapons out. You know, they're buried. Our main objective is to maintain peace at all costs, and that's what we are here doing. When those OPPs raided, there were no guns back here. The media has been fear-mongering that under the assumption, you know, they're Indians, they have guns. You know, we're one of the most oppressed people in the world. How can we afford heavy artillery? Like, be realistic. But Canada, they are going to use every ounce of force that they have. Why? Because it's in their constitution to enable them to do that, an illegal constitution.
Wow.
And they cannot afford to lose.
I think it's preposterous in light of the claim that Canada trumpets around the world that we're the world's great peacekeeper, and that, you know, this idea that's put out there where look at what goes on, you know, within these borders. Now, you did manage to repel the police twice, though, I understand.
Once.
Oh, okay. And somebody was unarrested? I believe somebody was arrested and then...
There were 16 of them arrested. We had women beaten. There was some younger teens here. They were dragged out of the tents by their... They're just dragged out of their tents, pepper sprayed. Some of the people who were sleeping here woke up to M16s being pointed in their faces. They're sleeping in their vehicles. It was awful, you know. And
now, is this the police or the military or both?
It was the OPPs that did it yesterday. So now, what the OPPs are saying is, you know, we're not coming in again. Yeah, that may be true, but they have the RCMP surrounded us on all these back streets and back roads, all the way around the area we're on now, and they have the armies already in Hamilton already, which is like 15, 20 minutes away. So as all of this, and they're still saying, you know, we want it to be peaceful. Well, put your guns away and come and talk then.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, how ridiculous is that?
And now, is this still the case that the RCMP have closed off the streets?
They've cut off access to a lot of routes, and all with a pretense of having a clear opening for them to come in.
Do you have internal media there who are reporting on what's happening on the inside?
They're not internal right now, but that's one suggestion I was going to make, because I'm pretty sure as soon as the weather clears up, like, we're on an open terrain here, and a lot of the land has been excavated, so the fields are muddy. The fog and the rain has made it horrible for the choppers to try to come down or land anywhere. But once that weather is good, I'm pretty sure they're going to come in. And so that was one suggestion I was going to make, was to bring the media in now.
Mm-hmm.
Last night, quite a few of the media left, and after they did, the OPP moved in closer and blocked it right off. So if anything were to happen, they would have been able to stop them from coming in.
Wow.
And yet, I've been reading on the internet that the quote-unquote, the standoff is coming to an end.
No, it isn't.
So what is this in the media, then? Is this sort of to try to calm everybody?
I've heard that twice, and I'm too busy being in the media to follow it.
Yeah.
I read this just last night that the blockade on the railway had stopped, that it had been dismantled.
Yeah, that's by Kingston. Yeah, that one was taken down.
So what do you foresee happening in the next few days and weeks?
Well, even though there are negotiations, or I shouldn't say negotiations, because I don't like that word, just because we've already had so much stolen from us, taken mm-hmm. from us, why should we have to give up something more?
Yeah.
I'd like to say discussions, because we aren't giving up anymore. You know, and we need to sit down and talk respectfully, peacefully, and with an ability to reason and understand, and that needs to happen. But as far as what goes on from here on in, like I said, it wouldn't surprise me as soon as the weather cleared up, things dried up, they come in. But right now there's no way that they can do it. It's just a waiting game, there's no way Canada can afford to lose this one.
And so if the weather clears up and they do come in, you anticipate the military will come this time?
That's already been confirmed. The RCMP and military are both waiting in the wings. The RCMP is right here in town, and the military, like I said, is maybe 15 minutes away.
And then what, they'll attempt to arrest everybody, or just...
Who knows?
Yeah,
I've always maintained right from day one, as far as any of the armed action from the police, like RCMP, OPP, or Army, or whatever, we can't really stress ourselves out over the unknown, because there's so much going on a day-to-day basis. We need to keep that energy focused on something positive, because that'll take too much away from our strength. And so we've done that, are we ready for it? Yes, we are. But like I said, we're here unarmed, and according to the media, some certain media outlets have tried to play it up that we're here with guns and this and that. Mm-hmm. And I was on a live talk show last night where this man asked me he said something about a house being nearby loaded with weapons. I just told him, well, you'll have to let me know where that is, because that's more information than I got. So it's people have a hard time understanding that we aren't armed. We're not here to fire any guns. We aren't here to shoot anybody. That's not why we're here. We're here to defend our territory. We're here to defend our existence as a nation. We're here to defend the future generations. That's why we're here.
Something else, another interesting angle, I think, is that it appears that the police and the army and all of this are acting basically on behalf of Henco, which is a private development company.
Yep.
And this, to me, is a kind of an interesting situation.
Yeah, it makes it more interesting because the judge that's presiding over the case, he has land holdings within that Haldimand tract that's under dispute.
And there's no perception of this being a conflict of interest?
He recused himself for 2 hours and come back and said no, he wasn't biased, and he continued on.
Wow.
Unbelievable.
Justice.
Yeah, what a mockery.
That's incredible.
Just Us, not you, just us. But yeah, and that's a hard reality. We as indigenous people have had to accept, you know, like the almighty dollar is more important than our existence.
Yeah.
You know, like the rights of this developer who's already made millions off of our unsurrendered territory. You know, he has more rights than we do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, hey, he's got the guns on his side, you know, all in the name of money. And for us, this land is not for sale. We don't want money back. We don't want anything but the land. You know, and people are saying, like, according to the Canadian laws, too, their so-called negotiations process that they use, right off the bat, only financial compensation. No land will ever be reverted back.
Wow.
So as far as being fair, no, that whole process isn't fair. And in regards to the jurisdiction, what they try to do is revert the land. You have to buy the land back to have it back into your possession.
God.
And when they do that, what they do is place it under the Indian Act. And see, that's not why we're here either, is to have that land reverted back to reserve status. Because it falls under the Indian Act, giving Canada that jurisdiction again.
God.
See, there's a...
Oh.
Hello?
Oh, yeah.
Hello.
No, he can hear you again.
Yeah, there's a whole lot. It's really in-depth, and unless you really know the core of it, you just won't get it. You know, you'll view us as rebels. They're saying, you know, we're violating the law, or blatantly... dancing around it. I've heard all kinds of comments like that, but unless you have an accurate accounting of history, we'll understand why we're here.
Well, thank you so much for summing it up.
I'm really glad that you've given me that opportunity to speak. This is a history lesson that needs to get out, and I appreciate the time you've given me.
One last thing I just want to say as well, it's really inspiring to see a lot of young women and women elders leading, so-called leading, the protest and being out there right in the front lines. It's really inspiring.
Well, yeah. I'll tell you another thing. In our culture, the men take the direction from the women. Our clan mothers... And the reason for that is we are the nurturers of all aspects of life, human life, plant life, animal life. All of those life forms derive from the earth, from the land. And so in regards to any land issues, that's our responsibility. The men's responsibility is to protect that life. So like any decisions that are being made, it's my responsibility under the Great Law or the Guyana Lagoa to be doing what I'm doing. It's those men's responsibility to be out here to protect us. And that's how it works in our society. And that's what the federal government threw out. That's what they removed at gunpoint. And what did they replace it with? That whole system based on paternalism, which totally goes against who we are.
Very
so there's
cool.
Like I said, there's a lot to it.
Well, we'll let everyone there know of any solidarity actions that go on around here. I'm sure there's people that want to support. And thank you so much for speaking with us. And
thank you.
Good luck. Have a good day.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. Good luck. Peace.
So that's Janie Jameson, the spokesperson for the Six Nations.